Welcome to the Health Tech Podcast. Here we talk about everything healthcare and technology. And I'm your host, James Sommaru. Hey everybody, this week I'm joined by Arturo Sanchez, and he's the founder and CEO of Sophia, a Mexican competitor to the European digital health platforms, and they are taking aim at the Mexican health insurance and primary care sectors. So, you may not know, but in the $65 billion US dollar Mexican healthcare sector, 91% of private spending is paid out of pocket by people. So too many people forced to pay extraordinary costs for healthcare, putting pressures on the access to primary care services. So Arturo and his team are hoping to change that with a brand new digital service, bringing patient care to them at lower cost. So plenty to enjoy in this episode. So Arturo, welcome to the Health Tech Podcast. How are you doing, mate? I was going to say this afternoon, but it's obviously this morning for you.
thanks, James. I'm fine. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's unfortunately nowhere near as sunny and warm as it looks where you are. Whereabouts are you speaking to us from today?
I'm in Mexico City. That's where I'm based, and that's where the company Sophia is based as well.
Amazing, amazing, very cool. So the way that we start these podcasts is we get you to tell your story. And so I suppose starting wherever your story begins, Arturo, just let us know a bit about your background and how you got to where you are.
Sure, James. I'm Mexican. I grew up in Mexico all the way through college. I did university here. I did applied mathematics at a university called UNAM, which is a technical university here in Mexico, which is, I would say, one of the leading universities in Mexico, but obviously I'm biased.
Of course you would say that.
After university, I literally wasn't sure, actually picking my major at the university, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do in life. So I picked mathematics because I was good at it, and I was told I could do a lot of different things with that that. As it turned out, that's true. After university, I still didn't know what I wanted to do. So I joined a small consultancy firm, headed by one of my university professors, which specialized in data analytics and statistics. So I got to use a lot of that quantitative background in the real world then for the first time. I worked there for about a year and a half, and then I applied and got into a master's degree at UCL. I joined I did a program called Computational Statistics and Machine Learning, which is sounds fancier than it is.
That sounds extremely intimidating to someone like me.
It has a long name, but I think that the name reflects a really cool aspect of that program, which is taught between computer science, statistics, and the Gatsby neuroscience unit at UCL. So it's cool. A very, very interdisciplinary program, which I think was the thing that attracted me to that particular program.
So it's paired a lot with neuroscience.
Yes. So the Gatsby Neuroscience Lab is a computational neuroscience outfit from UCL, and they do really, really cool stuff. And actually, if you look at a bunch of the folks that are now at DeepMind, they have connections to that unit. It's actually physically very closely located to where DeepMind is.
Interesting.
There's a connection there, and a lot of the stuff they do is in modeling or thinking about machine learning from a neuroscience perspective. So a lot of neurons modeling and mathematical models of the brain and all that. Actually, yeah, the course I took there was by far the hardest of the course.
It doesn't sound like you regretted it, though. It sounds like an awesome degree.
I do not regret it at all. It's a great degree. I'm very happy I did it. But after the degree, I stayed in the UK. I liked the weather.
You liked the weather? Wow. Goodness. You're a masochist if you like the weather here, honestly.
I love London. I love living there. So I looked for a job. I got an internship at a startup called Sunkick. It was a startup back then. And I think that was my first real interaction with technology in a professional setting.
Sure.
Before, I always loved technology, gadgets, apps, and all the like. But then during that internship, I started working actually in technology. And that ties back to how I ended up starting Sophia in a little bit. But I did my internship. I loved it there. So then I got a job at YouGov, the public opinion company. So that was really great. I remember I was deciding between YouGov and a gaming company because I was fortunate enough to have two offers then.
Wow.
The thing that caught me or that caught my attention was that the motto of the company was "What the world thinks," and I thought that's a really cool thing to be working on. so I joined YouGov and really enjoyed my time there. And then it was actually an accident, sort of, or like a serendipitous moment, kind of dragged me or put me on a path of more tech-centric career. One of the people I worked with at Sunkick mentioned my name to one of their investors when they were looking for someone with a quantitative background.
certainly have that.
Yeah. Resulting from that, I ended up talking to the folks at Index Ventures and joining Index in their London office. Index is a global VC, multi-stage. They invest anything like from very early on to, you know, like big companies or big startups. So I joined their London team and worked there for 3 years and a half, a little bit more. And I think through that was like really my plugging into tech as such. My rationale for joining then or joining Index was that at some point I'd like to create a startup or to create a company. And I thought, what better training ground than looking at thousands of startups and looking what makes them successful or what are common pitfalls and being there from the observer seat. And that was an amazing experience. I learned a ton. I think it really, being there, gave me the confidence to actually go and create a company because I got to interact with a lot of folks that have created great companies. And you realize that at the end of the day, they're just people that there to start the company, not superhumans in any way. Certainly wasn't any kind of superhuman, so that gave me the confidence.
Well, it's so interesting, man, because first of all, if you're going to go to a VC, I mean, Index Ventures, geez, I mean, you know, investors in Big Health who do Sleepio and Daylight, they invested in Cree or Livy, as it's known. Like, I mean, huge investment. I mean, incredible investments, these guys. I mean, their portfolio is absolutely enormous all around the world. It's one heck of a VC. So to join them and then be at the layer that you're critiquing those startups as well, like you've got to critically think about those startups. And so not only are you exposed to all of those companies, but you end up really critiquing the idea, critiquing the team, critiquing the way that they're going about things, all the different areas of what the company does. And I agree with you, because on a to a lesser extent, I suppose, you know, I ran accelerators and that's what we did. Everybody would always ask you for advice if they weren't part of the accelerator. Everybody was trying to apply to the accelerator. So you ended up reviewing so many decks, meeting so many people, always with that critical eye. And I think that's the difference, is that you were taught never to get excited almost. You were taught to find the flaws in it so that you could help make them better, or indeed if they were a portfolio company, or indeed to accept or reject them based on so many things. And so I suppose at a VC, what I won't have got, which you will have got as well, was I suppose the financial learning of how to actually model these things out and how to actually look at it from that financial element as well, which is suited, you know, all of that put together puts you really in the driving seat to be a founder. And like you say, founders are just humans. They're just people. They're just people too. And I think people with less exciting names of degrees than computational statistics and machine learning will have founded companies. me being one of them, medicine, definitely not as exciting, but yeah, I like that as a move. And I think just for the people listening, like, I just think that to be an associate of a VC firm, or to try and rise the ranks a little bit, and to be at an accelerator, I do think that if you're one of these people, possibly like me, that, you know, didn't have the killer idea or didn't have the inclination straight out of uni or anything like that to really start a tech company or anything like that, being at that layer that allowed me to critique startups was just so important for me to just find my feet and my confidence and figure out where my path was actually going to go. So yeah, love that.
No, definitely. I totally agree with that. And the other thing that happens when you're at a VC fund and you get to talk to people doing things actually, is that whenever you come across someone that is doing or building a company and things are working, you start questioning, why am I not doing that?
Right.
Why am I on this side of the table?
Right. Been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And definitely.
I think that was something that happened to me. Like I got the drive, or like got the motivation from these people that were doing things to go on and do something myself. And as you mentioned, Index has a bunch of exposure to health tech companies, Alan, Cree included. And together with my two other co-founders, I'll give you a bit of background on them. So they're also, I met them at uni, and they went on to have similar careers to mine, in that they went abroad to do a master's degree. They also did something around machine learning and statistics. They went, instead of to the UK, they went to the US, and they stayed working in San Francisco or the Bay Area in technology, one at Google, the other at Patreon. So the three of us were good friends, and we were immersed in the world of technology.
I'm just thinking how this must look on your deck, right? Like Google, Patreon, and Index Ventures. it just must look incredible when you're going for your round. Like, oh, that's great.
Yeah, no, it did help. But I'll tell you, when we set out to raise funds, we were in the other extreme of like hard mode. Capital raising, and I'll get into that in a bit. the three of us talked, what could we do if we were gonna go back to Mexico? Like we missed Mexico, we wanted to come back. The technology industry, at least at that time, wasn't as developed, so there weren't many places that we wanted to go and join. So we always ended up talking about ideas that we could pursue, or businesses or whatever. And at one point, with the Alan context of Index doing that investment, and my two co-founders heard and used Lemonade in the US, and so how that insurance experience could be totally redesign and thought from a technology angle, and it ends up being a much, much better user experience. We had that in kind of our minds, and then something happened, like one of us had a healthcare condition in the family. So his dad got ill, and he got to experience how the process was like. Yeah, and for this, I'll go into a bit of context of how Mexico and the Mexican healthcare system works. My friend's dad like have a very good private insurance, so it wasn't really a matter of him not being covered. So he had that, but even then, it was a super stressful process to just do all the paperwork and to handle that while you're at the same time that you're dealing with a health condition. You have to do all that like bureaucracy, even when you're covered. Our thinking was like there must be something that we can do to fix that and to create a very better user experience. So that I think that sparked the idea, and we started researching the healthcare system and how it interacts with insurance and just how it works, because something that's lacking in our backgrounds, or something that I didn't touch on our backgrounds, is A, healthcare experience, and B, insurance experience. Yeah.
But I love that though. I kind of like that you just had to Google how it works. Like, that's amazing. Like, but it's so true. Like, if you need complementary skills in a startup team, right? You can't have everything. And whilst, you know, having a clinician on board would have given you something, or someone from the healthcare industry, end of the day, if you guys have got the expertise to actually build the thing, that's the most important. And if it's information that you can get just by asking around, then ask around, and ask around for, you know, 20 of the 24 hours a day, and get 8 hours of sleep. But then, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's not insurmountable to find out how the healthcare system works. That's not a huge problem that you need to solve. It's more like building the technologies more, you know, that's a problem that you really need to solve with the expertise in house. But no, I think that's awesome that you just Googled how it works.
Although I do agree with that, the technology is super important. One thing that we also recognized was that we're numbers guys, so the insurance part is a numbers game, so we probably can figure it out and
fair,
not mess too badly on that one.
Yeah, but I think you back yourselves there, to be honest. Yeah, I can believe that.
But on the clinical side, like we don't know how to apply a Band-Aid or anything. Like,
sure.
So actually the first person to join us was a clinician, medical doctor. And
so you Googled it enough to realize that you needed a clinician on board. So at least you did the initial bit. So exactly. There you go.
Yeah, no. And actually that's a very important part of how we think about building things, like the clinician and just the actual medical care delivery is deeply ingrained in how we think about the solutions that we build. But coming back to the context of the Mexican system and the problem that we're solving.
Yeah.
So we started at the kind of user experience layer, and we thought that can be interesting. We imagine an app, and that will make everything nicer and easier and more streamlined and all and whatnot. But when we started researching, we discovered like a deeper kind of more profound problem to fix. And that is that, unlike my friend, that a lot of people in Mexico don't have a coverage or medical coverage.
Okay.
So to paint a parallel with the how the NHS works in the UK, there's a state-provided healthcare system. And something like 70% of people have access to that, but not everyone has access to that. And crucially, it tied to your employment. So if you're full-time employed, you have that. But if you don't, then you're out of luck. They're making some changes to that, and they're theoretically expanding the coverage. But the other thing, which is unlike the NHS, is that the experience or the quality for let's say mild to medium severeness illness is not great. Like I love the NHS. I used it a couple of times when I was living in the UK, and it's brilliant. I think some I've heard complaints that you know, sometimes it takes too long to get an appointment or whatnot, but fundamentally I think it works. In contrast, or to put that in contrast with the Mexican system, the waiting times are a much more serious problem here. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that a lot of people that in theory are covered end up going seeking assistance or care out of pocket or okay. outside the system. So to paint numbers, roughly half the or approximately half the healthcare spend in the country is private, and half is public. So that half that system represents half of what is spent in healthcare. Mm-hmm. But the other half is private. And of the private part, 90% comes out of pocket. Wow. So that's a lot of, or that represents a lot of cases of people that might be covered or might not be covered, but at the end of the day, they're paying out of pocket
right.
to get medical care.
Which creates a market.
Exactly. Like, it's not an optional product that you can opt out of not buying. It's healthcare. Like at the end of the day, if you're needed, you're gonna find a way to pay it. But it's done in such a way that is so inefficient, puts the financial stability of the folks at risk very frequently. So that's kind of the problem that we actually set out to solve or to tackle. Not at the core the user experience, which was what we started with, and that's something that we do think it's critical and crucial mm-hmm. to solve the problem, but the root problem that we're trying to solve or that we're trying to make better at least is the problem of access to healthcare in a planned and predictable way, as opposed to just like getting a random huge bill that you weren't planning to get. So seeing the magnitude of the problem, it was easy to just like take the leap and decide the three of us would move back to Mexico and work on this.
Wow.
So that's been a long answer to the question of how did Sophia start it.
That's cool, man. So what did you build first of all then? I imagine that you guys were just keen to get stuck in and build something. So yeah, talk to me about what you've built.
Sure. So you're right. We were keen to just build things and code and all the that fun stuff. But we, when looking at this problem, we figured out that the best or the way to have a biggest impact was to go through the creating a new type of insurance product. And to do that and to do it in a way that was different to what exists today or existed at that moment, we didn't want to just like put on a nice user interface on top of some old insurance mm-hmm. product. So we decided that we wanted to create or that we needed to create an insurance company, which is a scary thought at first.
I was going to say, that sounds pretty bold.
Yeah, no, like one of my co-founders in particular was like, what are you talking about? How do you create an insurance company? That's not something that, it's not like a corner store that you just go and start.
Yeah.
But we did our research and set out to do that. And to touch back on what you were saying about fundraising and having like nice sounding backgrounds in our pitch deck, the way to do it is you need a bunch of money upfront before you can sell anything or before you have any proof points around the anything working, because you cannot like do it the other way around. So to your point of, our pitch deck had that, those nice backgrounds of the three founders, but we were looking to raise a significant amount of money, and we were looking to do it in a market or in a place which was Mexico, which isn't exactly the tech or focus point, or wasn't at that time. So I think it evened out, and in the end, we put together a seed round, which was we're very pleased with that. We got Kasek Ventures, which is one of the or the leading firm, VC firm in Latin America, and we got Rivet Capital, which is a worldwide household name in terms of fintech and insurance and all that. So we're super pleased with how that came together. And we did it. We started the process to create the insurance company, but that took a long while. It took almost 2 years from when we filed the initial thing to when we issued our first insurance policy. So it was long, but in parallel to that, we were building, which was exactly how, like as you said, what we really enjoyed doing. And what we built is essentially a healthcare plan that covers everything from, you know, the first moment that you have some symptom and you might want to talk to a doctor, that looks or the way that shows in the product is that we built a telemedicine service that's built into the insurance plan. At the first moment you want to talk to a doctor, you just open the app and start a video consult. And a few minutes later, a doctor will be on screen talking to you and guiding you to what's next. Another big component of what we built is navigating the healthcare system is hard. So we built a customer support system, which is very prominent in the app. We call it Los Sabios, which translated to English means something like the wise ones or something like that. It sounds less pompous in Spanish. Sure.
We don't have the prettiest of languages or the most artistic, I don't think, compared to other nations, but
that's funny. But these folks and this team is there to guide you through your healthcare journey. So if after the initial telemedicine consult with one of our doctors, what you need to do is to go to a specialist or to go to a facility to get a lab test or something, this team will guide you to what are the necessary things that you need to think of, and they will manage a bunch of the logistics all in order to make this process that is sometimes very confusing and not clear to the end user, as easy as it can be. It's the insurance component of it, which is like if you end up going to a hospital and the bill is large, it's included in the service or in the healthcare plan that the insurance kicks in and covers the cost and makes that episode more manageable.
Well, firstly, congratulations, because I think what you've achieved is it's frankly outrageous. Like, you've done it. You built the insurance company, first of all. I mean, secondly, to actually have, it's an insurance company with its own telemedicine platform, which you've built, which again is incredible. But then also like a patient guidance or flow support or whatever you want to call that extra bit that helps them through the system. And it's so just hits me in the face that you've solved the problem end to end for people. Like, you haven't just gone in at one of those three things. You've literally just appreciated that the big problem to solve was the insurance problem, which actually benefits not only the individuals, but you'd argue the society and everything else to do with the way that the country manages healthcare. But, you know, also the bits within that that are going to be sticking points, you know, the practical ability to see a doctor is solved with telemedicine. The practical how-tos of, you know, how to flow through the system are solved with the flow management, which then is only going to mean that then your insurance product actually gets more customers at the end, right? Because essentially, in order for them to in order for you guys to make the money from the insurance element, and those patients have to be seen through. And so you're almost incentivized to make it easy for people to go through. Did you have it in mind that it was always going to be the insurance products plus these other things, or did you kind of, or I suppose, are you still looking at the problems to solve even within what you're doing?
I think from the first moment we set out to do this, and when we decided that the insurance path was the one we wanted to take, we appreciated how powerful or how deep having that insurance foundation could be.
Yeah.
One of the aspects that you touched on but I'd love to double click is the incentives one, because you mentioned that you're incentivized for care to be delivered, but I think one underappreciated incentive in healthcare is that if put at the center, it can be very powerful, is that on a long enough timeline, an insurance company is financially incentivized to have people be healthier.
Correct. Correct.
Because if at the end of the day, if people don't get sick, or if they do get sick, it is a milder illness, that costs less money to the insurance company.
Yeah.
And what I think is not done enough, or not explicitly said enough, is the time frame element to that, because sometimes these savings will manifest years down the line, and not immediately, but that incentive link exists even regardless. So one thing that we're bringing very explicit in how we think about the business that we're building is that we want to minimize the lifetime cost of care of any of our users, because when you frame it like that, then you're financially incentivized to perhaps invest a lot today, or what seems to be a lot of resources today, to be preventive and to focus on keeping people healthy, and just things that might seem expensive today, but if you plot it in a long enough timeline, those things actually will seem like a steal in terms of return of investment in value being delivered to patients, and just like savings to the insurance company. So that's the other on top, like besides or alongside the element of integrating everything, as you were saying, the other deep reason why we love why we want to do insurance as the foundation is because of that incentive and that link existing, and we want to exploit it as much as possible to just make ourselves think in the long term of people's healthcare, because that ultimately is aligned with people's help. And we believe that you build something around that notion, it's something that's super valuable for society, and you'll eventually benefit from that.
I completely agree. I do think all the incentives are aligned so nicely. And I'm just curious, like, for you guys that are so numbers based, and I imagine you get quite a lot of kicks from seeing the, you know, the numbers of the insurance company element. But I also think you guys must want to keep building, right? You've got the telemedicine component, you've got the component that allows people to flow through the system. Are you thinking of any other features that can sit within your essentially, you know, end-to-end healthcare product, which is what it is mainly? Do you guys think in that way of other things that you could do to streamline it?
Yes, I think one of the big ideas that we have on our minds right now is how to build tailored solutions for different healthcare conditions. You might not know it, but diabetes is actually super widespread in Mexico. Obesity is also like a big problem.
Okay.
And the way insurance treats those is that, okay, you have that. If you want insurance, it's going to cost you more, and that's it. But that solution seems too simplistic and not going at the root cause of the issue. And what we want to do, and it connected to what I was saying about the incentives being connected, is we want to create, or we're working in creating, dedicated plans for these type of conditions. So let's say you have a problem with obesity, then us, instead of just like selling you more expensive insurance, we're gonna sell you a plan that yes, has the insurance component to it, but crucially, one that we see a possible intervention that we can facilitate for the patient to improve their healthcare condition, so that the person is healthier at the end of the day, and we observe a financial benefit at the other end to tie the incentive again. So in the case of something like obesity, we're gonna have a plan that includes like consults with the nutritionist, and just like build that experience very integrated with the insurance. Obviously, these visits with the nutritionist would be included in the insurance.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if a person does get healthier, that represents a savings for them, but also for us. So we're gonna share those, so that for this person that enrolled in this program, they would see two main benefits. One, they got an insurance plan that helped them manage that condition. If they did manage it, and they did the work to manage that condition, they're gonna see their insurance costs reduced. So it's a double whammy for them, because they're healthier and they have to pay less for their insurance. And at the same time, we're having a positive impact on our insurance business model.
Yeah, so definitely.
That's the direction that we're building, and we're gonna be building kind of condition by condition, just creating these focused plans and offering people a better way to manage those conditions.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting to me, I suppose, there's a lot of people that will be listening from the UK that, you know, we have our state system, as you mentioned, and the opposite to that, or you know, a different way of doing things is the insurance system, like you've described. And whilst you'd always need that safety net for people that wouldn't be able to afford it, and obviously all the political issues with it, those aside, it's interesting to me the incentives that are created in an insurance system like you've described, and, you know, particularly the way that you've set your company up and the way that you think about this in terms of being, or you know, being of the opinion that at the end of the day, the healthier that people become, the greater the financial incentives for everybody involved and the greater health benefits involved for the patient. It's interesting to me then, obviously, that you're then going disease specific and saying, well, we can think in what I'd consider quite a modern way of thinking about nutritionists and, you know, all those different things that aren't necessarily here have some insulin or here have some glucoside or, you know, whatever it is. It's a different way of doing things. I'm curious, in Mexico, is what you're doing becoming the new normal, or is what you're doing quite new, innovative, and or disruptive?
I think it's quite new. There is insurance, there is health insurance, but it's typically very centered around the financial aspect of it. So
yeah,
it's like you see that in that the top five health insurance providers also sell car insurance and house insurance and all sure. types of different products. So they're not tailored to the very particular nature of health insurance. We do see some incumbents doing a lot more in terms of integrating more around the healthcare journey. For example, Bupa is launching here, or has launched and is integrating more with some providers, which at the end of the day is awesome. I think if in 5 years' time we look at this moment and say, oh yeah, remember when before that health insurance used to be like this financial thing, but now the expectation is, you know, your health insurer will give you a holistic healthcare experience. Mm. And that'd be an amazing place to be. I think a much better place for Mexican society to be in.
Yeah, definitely. So what's the future for you guys? What are you guys looking at the moment? Whereabouts are you as a company? Have you got good scale in Mexico now? Are you looking for more people to sign up? Whereabouts are you and what's the future?
We actually, as I mentioned, the creating the insurance company was a lengthy endeavor.
took quite a while, yeah.
Yeah, so we launched the product actually just a few weeks back.
Oh, wow.
And we're signing up. We're signing up customers, and we have a long list of people that have shown interest in the product, but we're being, let's say, mindful or careful about how fast we want to add new customers, because our priority is to offer a great experience throughout these journeys.
Sure.
And obviously at first there are things to iron out and the like. So we're focusing on that. And for the future, our company mission is to improve the way millions of people take care of their health, in Spanish, obviously. And that word, the millions, is key, because it's quote unquote easy to provide a better experience for a few people, a few hundred people or something.
Sure.
But really our ambition is to have that level of impact in the millions of people. And that's not constrained necessarily to Mexico. We see a lot of cultural similarities across Latin America. So we definitely are thinking, perhaps not immediately, but it's definitely on our minds, which other Latin American countries we could go into. And that's really what we want to achieve, to create a better solution for millions of people that want to take better care of their health.
Amazing. So, we're about to wrap up, but is there anything that you would like to ask of our audience? Obviously, we've got listeners all around the world, and shout out to the listeners in Mexico, by the way. I had a quick look before we jumped on this. So, in fact, I think you were on the call, weren't you, when I looked, and Mexico is about a quarter of the way down the list of 100 odd countries. So we do have a fair few listeners in Mexico. So hello to those. But have you got anything to ask those listeners in Mexico, or indeed anybody around Latin America or anywhere really.
That's interesting. I think if anyone listening to this has some thoughts or things that have rang similar to things happening in other geographies, or things that thought, oh, you know, that Sophia reminded me of this, which is happening in, I don't know, Indonesia or any other country. And if they're keen to talk about it, I'd love to hear it. So feel free to reach out, and I'm be super interested in exchanging point of views of how healthcare is evolving around the world.
Amazing. And for those people, or indeed the people in Mexico, what's the best way for people to get in touch with either you or the company?
For the company, it's their website, sofiasalud.com. And for me, I'm on Twitter and on LinkedIn, Arturo Sanchez Correa, Arturo Sacco on Twitter. So feel free to reach out. And I'd love to talk.
Amazing. Arturo, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. It's been a bit of back to basics for me, this. I've really enjoyed it. It's proper early doors of health tech startup, although perhaps not so early doors when you're building an insurance company. You seem like veterans already because you've been building for so long and getting your ducks in a row, everything like that. But yeah, it's been a pleasure having you on, dude. As I say, I love hearing your backgrounds, the way that you've come together to build this thing. It's no mean feat building any company. You know, Jonathan from Machine Medicine was on this a few weeks ago and said, you know, if you're building a company, it's just as difficult, you know, trying to start a fish and chip shop than it is trying to build a health tech company. So you might as well try and do the thing that fills you with joy, or, you know, gives you that happiness, or, you know, is your calling. And I think for you, you know, with the aim of solving this problem, which is a problem globally for millions of people, as you said, I think is a really honorable way to go, and I hope you do it, man. I really do. And definitely keep us updated. We'll get you back on in another 2 years and see how far you've got. But yeah, until then, dude, I wish you all the best of luck.
Yeah, no, thanks, James. It was a pleasure, and I 100% agree with that sentiment.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening and making it all the way to the end of this episode. Remember to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. And you can head to the description of this episode to follow me on all of my social media so you don't miss out on any of the latest health tech content.